Nitrate Power. You're in the dog zone for an hour. Come on. You know the number. 9000, the official podcast of the very last website, 1900hotdog.com. We are highly trained garbage archaeologists, still doing funny and informative articles every day. After four wonderful, zany years, we have never pivoted to video or fired everybody. Become a patron at patreon.com/1900hotdog to get daily jokes, our increasingly vengeance-driven bonus podcasts, Discord events, and to help keep the medium of text and pictures made by humans alive. I'm Sean Baby from the internet. Very beloved, and my partner is the grand prize winner of the Wang Festival's runner-up flopping hunk, Bobby Five Robert Brockway.
I'm working on hard hunk, but I got like a plan. It involves ancient cannibals. That's really all I can go into for right now. I'm Robert Brockway. Here's the Robert Brockway effect. I also witnessed a robot given miraculous sentience, but I beat that motherfucker to death on the spot because I'm not a traitor to humanity. No follow-up questions.
None needed.
Yeah, none.
Today, you can hear him. Today we're talking about deranged classic films, so we've brought in an expert. You probably recognize his voice from here or the Gamefully Unemployed Podcast Network. He's Tommy Five, Tom Ryman.
I can eat my weight in cannibals.
I have a way to test that, and it's real sexy.
Powerfully erotic. Deliciously erotic, shall I say.
Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks. No, I'm happy to be here. This is a movie that I thought everybody knew about.
I imagine a lot of them have. Yeah. Okay. We're talking about Short Circuit. Before we do that, what are you working on these days? Let's do a plug.
Oh, man. Well, you can find me over at Gamefully Unemployed. That's patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's the podcast network I co-run with David Bell. We do all kinds of stuff. Movie podcasts. We have some fun stuff we co-host with the people from Small Beans. You should check it out. We do fun stuff. Do that. That's my plug.
It's true. I agree.
We're stepping into your territory with this, aren't we?
That's true.
Is that why you're feeling
real? You probably have
a whole real defensive, real
short
jabby?
Circuit podcast show you're working on. I don't know if did you take that as an insult? I did not mean it as an insult. I'm very excited to talk about Short Circuit.
I thought I really loved this movie. It turns out I really loved Short Circuit 2.
Yeah.
I don't remember this one as much, it turns out.
Yeah, Short Circuit 2 was the one with all the influence on me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Everyone remembers the timeless classic, Short Circuit 2.
Right, like Los Lobos kick your ass.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I owe a lot to that rhyme specifically.
Do you owe really your marriage to it? That's my hope.
Arguably,
because
yeah.
One time we said somebody joked about that. That was Dan. That was Dan McQuaid who joked about mm-hmm. owing like a marriage to a mannequin. And it turned out not to be a joke.
Yeah, that they really bonded over that.
I mean, I do owe my marriage to Ric Flair.
Okay.
I have no follow-up questions. I'm
None
certain
necessary.
I know how that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo! Let's do some fun Short Circuit facts right here at the top. This movie made in 1986 for $15 million, and about 10% of that was spent on the robot. And I'd say it looks like a more expensive movie than that. I think this
looks like a more expensive robot. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's true
that it's that low.
Yeah, no, the robot looks pretty good. I specifically didn't look anything up about this movie, so I'm prepared to surprised and delighted.
Well, let me give you some more fun facts. It was directed by John Badham. You've probably seen about 30 things he's done. I mean, that's everybody, not just Tom and Brockway. He had just directed War Games before this, so he was perfect.
Oh yeah,
that
makes
sense.
Yeah. And maybe I've been thinking about 90s Seinfeld too much lately, but what's the deal with the surname Badham? How bad were his ancestors' hams? If your last name is Needham, I can understand it. Jamie, you can cut all of this. Wait, no! Jamie, leave it in! Needham, I can picture, guys. I need a ham. I need it now.
I want a
You're
lamb.
Always saying that. That's what we'll call you and your children down forever. I love it here in the past. We could take a 13-year-old wife and no one makes it weird. But you saw one bad ham. Your great-great-grandson must carry your shame with him. Again, Jamie, just cut all of it. I don't know what happened. What
Jamie, you're not allowed to cut any of that.
What a burden to put on your family. Bad ham. Shit. That casts a long shadow.
There's an actor in Predator named Billy Landham.
There sure is.
So many ham names.
I could talk about him for 45 minutes if you'd like.
I like that it implies the existence of a sea ham and an air ham.
Yes. Is there a sea ham out there? If your ancestors earned the name sea ham, please let us know. Okay, here's a fun fact. Fisher Stevens played a character named Ben Jabintuya.
Here's a fun fact. He should not have.
He should not have.
It's brutal.
Famously not South Asian. This was a last-minute decision by the director because the character was supposed to be white. They decided he should be a funny foreigner. And guess who they wanted to cast?
Fisher Stevens? First choice. That's who I go to when I need a funny foreigner.
Andy Kaufman.
Bronson Pinchot. You're both very close.
Fuck, yeah, that was...
They couldn't get Bronson Pinchot. He was, of course, Balky from...
Yeah. He was balls deep in Perfect Strangers at this point.
He was doing a rival impression.
and crushing it. Just miles ahead. Right, so they couldn't get Bronson Pinchot, so they painted some Jewish guy brown and said, we have at least 25 years before anyone notices this is racist. To his credit, Fisher tried. He claims he tried. He says, he studied India. Not enough to discover they had their own film industry with their own actors, but he did learn their people's terrible syntax, their stupid dumbness, and their bumbling horniness. And I think he brought all that really respectfully.
That's the one thing I did look up. Just like Tom, I didn't look up anything about this. The one thing I did look up was, did Fisher Stevens ever pay for this? Did he pay? Was there a record?
Dude, I mean, he was in Super Mario, so...
He was dating Michelle Pfeiffer shortly after this. So yes. This was... provably peak 80s hunk, like the most desirable woman on the planet, top 10 of at least, was like, that's the one.
No, so this not only did he not get punished, this was like the keys to the kingdom for him.
Yeah. Right.
So he learned the wrong lesson from this.
There's no reason to do it, I would say. Like,
it's worse than Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's, or at least it's like at that level.
Yeah, I agree.
It's definitely at that level. I wouldn't say worse.
You're right. I want to walk that back. It's not worse, but it is like at that level.
It feels like less intentionally mean-spirited, but like probably more. I feel like this defines how a lot of people thought about like Indian like personalities for like a generation of racists. Like the term, oh my golly gosh, like my dad would say that about like Indian dudes he worked with. He has since like realized that wasn't a nice thing to do, but that's just like the whimsical racism like we all just sort of grew up with, and that's kind of Fisher Stevens' fault.
I don't know if it's his fault or if it was just that was the pre-existing racism and it's did for this movie. But like all of it, really like he does the sir thing. It's really really gross.
Yeah,
I'm comfortable saying it's his fault. I'm comfortable. If you're not comfortable with that,
well, what's he going to do? Fuck Michelle Pfeiffer at us? Come on. There's a stand-up bit you probably heard. Aziz Ansari like did not know he was white. And so it was decades later when he realized Fisher Stevens was not an Indian actor. And he does a bit about it that I think is like so profound. So it's so fucking funny.
Yeah, I heard that bit, and it was the same thing for me. Like I had no idea that it was the same dude in Hackers. Like I thought this was just an Indian actor. Like in my memory, this was just an Indian actor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought
there's no reason to suspect anything. Why would they do this?
Right. It's insane that they did it.
That was my childhood memory too, lying to me about things being more okay than they were. Because I watched this again, and that guy showed up, and I was like, "Where's the Indian guy?" And then he started talking. And I was like, "What? What is this? Wait, is he making fun of the Indian guy who hasn't come on camera yet?" Like, I'm really, just a total idiot about it. And then slowly was like, "Oh my god, I didn't remember this. I didn't remember this at all."
You're like, "Be cool, movie. Be cool."
But also besides the shameful legacy of racial degradation, it was filmed in Astoria, the Hollywood of Oregon.
That is the Goonies house.
It is. Goonies, Kindergarten Cop, Free Willy.
I knew it. Yeah, Ali Sheedy's house. I was like, that's the Goonies house.
It's crazy what a moment Astoria had for like that's Kindergarten Cop too, right?
Yeah,
not yep. two, but you know what I mean.
Correct. Yes, Kindergarten Cop as well,
and therefore Silent Hill. Just echoing throughout pop culture, Astoria. I've been to Astoria. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's fine.
It's,
I
it's
don't
fine.
Think I'd go it there exists. And say, I'm going to build a, you know.
I've never been.
A film franchise here.
But I had the album by the Ataris.
So you get it.
Yeah, no, I feel like I understand it.
That's the same.
Yeah, it's like I was there.
Have you ever got blackout drunk with like a fisherman who didn't have a reason to live anymore? You get it. That's a story.
You get it. I guess let's talk about what happens in the movie. The credits, I think, are pretty impressive. It's all like close up of robotics and soldering. And it's like, you know, aside from the racism, the movie feels very timeless in its practical effects. And you can see that like right off the bat.
It's
army.
A lot of like, I wrote down that it begins with a robot workout video set to like robot fuck music.
Yeah, it is kind of like a training montage. Yeah. For, like...
It is. It's like the Rocky IV training montage, except it's robotics.
Robotics.
I immediately recognize that backbeat as the pounding hips of a robot. You are correct.
The army's doing like a arms test with a squad of war robots. They blow up a full convoy of jeeps and trucks. Also a tank. It's a Russian tank that obviously not a real Russian tank. They dressed one up and it shoots at the robots. And
that's
so it feels
crazy.
Like a real live. Yeah, like that's fucking crazy. That
that's
means it's either
remote decision.
Controlled. Yeah, or the robots killed like a full tank squad.
Right, you don't don't have them shoot back in like a weapons test with decoys and dummies. Like you don't have a guy out there throwing haymakers at the atomic bomb before it goes off. It's
yeah.
That's not the kind of test this
See
is.
See if you can break the suplex.
Rocky Marciano, get out there and punch the bomb just for a few rounds.
Like what if that had worked? What if that had hit? And they say right up top, each of these robots costs $11 million. If that tank had hit one?
I was obsessed with that number for the entire movie. That's all I could think about. I was like, this is an $11 million war bot.
That's also most of my notes because this movie gets fucking crazy if you consider that these things cost $11 million.
I know
it doesn't make sense what anybody does at any turn.
As I wanted to point out in this training montage, like they have the little robots hiding in like pillboxes to shoot from like very secure positions at the tank. So it's unclear why they're better than like just regular dudes with RPGs,
or like put that laser on a pole.
Yeah,
give it to a guy.
Give a guy that laser. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why wouldn't you just give a dude that? They're way more mobile.
Yeah, a guy costs like $400.
Nah, you got to give him a signing bonus. He's got to buy a Dodge Challenger.
Okay, so 11 grand, $400.
Well, he doesn't have to buy the whole thing. He just has to put a down payment, like $3,000.
That's right, just the down payment. Okay. Very affordable, though.
He just has to demonstrate his commitment to buy.
So the robots also further demonstrate their usefulness by making the guy a cocktail. And this is fucking so... I don't know what's the word. This is a flex.
Yeah.
He calls the top military brass and the Saudi investors out to sit right next to a fucking exploding tank shell and five nuclear missile robots so they can watch a $30 trillion worth of budget make him a cocktail. It's just like, just slap him with your dick. You're giant.
Why does it know how to do that? Like, this is 1986 and these are like advanced robotics. But like in 1986 to have a robot make a gin and tonic like that took some programmer, like, what, 19 months to make that program?
Every one of our military supercomputers working round the clock for a summer just to, like, run that program back then.
The carbon footprint of teaching this robot how to make a drink, like, scorched 1,000 years off this planet.
It's like sinking 4 cruise ships. Also, delivers the line like just how I like it, shaken, not stirred, and I love that so much because the guy, one of the guys doing background voices, just fucking loses it. He's just
hilarious. Well, the sense of humor of this movie really is like, let's say a line from something else only here. So a James Bond line is fucking 10 out of 10 joke for the Short Circuit universe.
That guy, the one guy, one extra on set that day, fucking killed.
Yeah. Well, the robot, it's funny you mentioned how like the budget and the carbon footprint, because the robot team is actually pretty lean. It's just in its entirety, the robotics team is the shocking racist Fisher Stevens and Steve Guttenberg, who plays an incel nerd who happens to look like a very fit movie star, Steve Guttenberg. And it kind of works that he knows how to make a gin and tonic, because Steve Guttenberg has ditched the entire like demonstration to just fuck around in the robot's lap. He's teaching piano to some robot hand.
He's like the Willy Wonka of Northrop Grumman.
Yeah. Yes. I love it. The perfect way to describe it.
It's amazing.
Because you never get those
kids back.
You never
know when he's joking. Yeah, he's like really dry, but like working with lasers and nuclear bombs, like people are dying because of his work. They cut to a cocktail party, and I really like the filmmaker's concept of war, because they have this general just bragging to a civilian, like, here's the idea. You take a robot, you drop him on a parachute into Moscow. He waits for nuclear war to end. Then he goes up to the middle of fucking Red Square and bombs them with the nuclear missile he has. It's a child's idea of how this would work.
Right. And we see this notion get defeated several times over throughout the movie as Johnny Five is toppled by a pipe. and other such things. But this like cocktail party fascinated me because it's not only do they have the warbots serving drinks and hors d'oeuvres with their laser guns still on their shoulders, and one of them is just spinning in circles. I don't know if you guys noticed that guy. But there's also other robots that are just serving like coffee and hors d'oeuvres. So that means the military also built those robots for Steve Guttenberg. So they built his Pee-wee's Playhouse robots for him.
Yeah, they never give an alternate use for the cocktail robots.
Yeah, for the coffee bot
the war bots are making cocktails, but then there are also several other robots there to deliver hors d'oeuvres and shit. And like you can see that that's all that can do. Like it is purpose built for that. So each of those costs like what, $3 million?
They're probably filled with mustard gas. I bet those have some military options. They have a great sense of safety in this place. It's like a fucking high school gym, and there's like 70 malfunctioning robots in every single room. While we're at the cocktail party,
that's just spinning around, pointing its laser gun at everyone's head in the room.
Johnny Five gets hit by lightning, and they're like, oh, Jesus Christ, he got hit by lightning. And the other guy's like, nah, he seems okay. But he's not. He's like smashing into walls. And then he gets shoved outside by an automated trash bot. This whole place is filled with zany robots. They
$6 million
drive away with it.
For trash bot.
I want to point out that Johnny Five screams when he gets struck by lightning.
That's the first thing lightning delivers is the ability to feel pain. The ability to feel specifically getting hit by lightning.
He screams.
I miss the days when this was enough, when you were like, how do we make the robot alive?
Yeah, just lightning.
I don't know, lightning? Whatever. Just fucking lightning.
A fucking child's wish. Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit? Mel Gibson falls into a bathtub with some pantyhose.
Who cares? He bumps his head. I don't fucking know.
Every tragedy is magic.
There was, I mentioned this, I think, two podcasts ago. There's a Martin Lawrence movie where he travels through time, and he straight up like works at a medieval times carnival place, and he just finds a magic medallion in a like a ditch.
Sure, black
like that. Yeah. They're like, we do not fucking care. Right. Give him a magic medallion.
Doesn't matter.
I love it. It's refreshing.
He could have got it in his. He could have found it in his mailbox. It doesn't matter.
Yep, it doesn't matter. Okay. So now the robot's missing outside the fucking walls of the military base. It seems very serious. Like I'm not sure if Johnny Five has a nuclear weapon on him, but. I know he's outfitted for that. He's at least like a menace.
Right. We saw the laser blow up a tank, blow up a Jeep full of mannequins. Like it's not like not dangerous.
I think they say that the lasers are nuclear powered somehow. Like, I don't think they knew or thought anybody else would know what that means. I think they were just like, yeah, it's fucking nuclear.
It's like it would be like a malfunctioning drone with a live payload. Like,
right.
That thing could blow dangerous. Up a school if we don't get it back in here.
Yeah. And it feels like an 80s movie, and that, like, looking at it now, you're kind of like, oh, this is not as whimsical as they're making it out to be. Like, they're making the bad guy. They have the bad guy from Police Academy. He's like, I'm going to go blow up that fucking robot. And you're like, Yeah, that feels
he
like
hates
the move.
Robots. Like it seems personally really for him. Like he really
I feel
hates
like
robots.
That's the only place on Earth. And this at this, in 1986, that lab specifically is the only place on Earth where you can't work if you hate robots.
Right. But that's who they got. So they like talk to Johnny, they can communicate with him. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? Why don't you come back home? And he sends back, wouldn't you like to be a Pepper too? Because he's looking at a Dr. Pepper billboard. Because we all remember that timeless Dr. Pepper slogan from 70 slogans ago. We were all saying it. If we're talking about fleeting taglines, where's the beef was right there. And we would have enjoyed that so. Can you imagine how much fun we'd have if watching a movie from 1986 and a robot says, where's the beef?
Delightful, yeah.
I don't remember Killer it completely, joke. But I think if that's going to happen, that's going to happen in Short Circuit 2. I have faith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a non-zero chance that happens in Short Circuit 2.
This is going to sound fucking crazy, but you want to meet next week and talk about Short Circuit 2?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course.
Okay, let's do it.
I already okay. have that in my calendar.
Good. Thank you. I have in my notes, the robot parachutes off a bridge and onto a food truck, and it's fucking awesome. Like
I have in my notes
that,
right before that happens.
Flawless.
He's getting pushed along by like a military Jeep up to highway speeds, and then the Jeep slams on its brakes and catapults him through a construction zone. And what the construction worker turns around and sees a praying mantis robot blasting at him at highway speeds, and he yells, "Hey, what do you think you're doing?"
Yeah, at the, he's at like, the robot. Watch it here. At this fucking homunculus coming at him.
I feel like as the movie goes, you kind of realize they all like live next to the robot military base. So I feel like that must happen to them a lot. Like the coffee robots are always escaping and shit. So.
Right. This is the implication is that these robots are constantly terrorizing Astoria.
Right. Like they all behave like the village at the bottom of Dracula's castle. They're all like, yeah, there's some fucking robots come out sometimes, man. We just deal with it.
Well, welcome to Astoria, pal. We got a real robot problem.
It's the Lost Boys, but just replace it with robots. Fucking
the Bot Boys.
And robots. Robots everywhere. Some of them are sexy.
Some of them are very sexy. Some of them are Alex Winter.
She fucks the robot, right? I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of us.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
You're way too ahead.
You're not wrong.
Yes. So, but yes, we've landed on Ally Sheedy's truck, who's kind of, I guess, the love interest of at least three characters in this movie. Her life is a wreck. She's being haunted by an ex-boyfriend who we see him trying to steal her dog for medical research. Yeah. it's maybe the worst thing I've ever seen anyone write for a character. It's like, we got to show this guy's an asshole. What could he be doing? I don't know. Make him the ex-boyfriend. I don't know. Could it be like 50 times worse than that?
It was like the first thing they suggested was to have him show up like dressed as a Nazi. And they're like, no. I'm like, right. Okay, what if he's there to steal her dog for animal research? Okay, yes. That's it.
What if he brings a dog with him and shoots it right in front of her just to prove a point? I feel like the audience might get it.
Yeah, he's a varsity scumbag. He's great.
Yeah, and it's not like there's a reveal that he's not so bad. Like, they get in a baseball bat fight, he shoves her to the ground, and, like, this all happens between a live raccoon and four geese. Someone should be hospitalized from at least two or three of the things that I just described.
Those geese are traumatized. No. You can't show domestic violence in front of geese. They learn.
That explains geese.
That explains all geese.
That's why they're like that, yeah.
They weren't like that before this.
Hurt geese.
Steve Guttenberg and Fisher Stevens are now, like, the crack team sent out to recapture number five, and they're going to take number one, a non-malfunctioning robot. I have a clip from this, and you'll get a taste of Fisher Stevens if you've never seen this movie.
Well, it's an opportunity to spread your legs. Good to smell the breezes, hmm?
Has it changed much out there?
Oh, yes, you can say that two times.
Hey, come on, you guys. Come on, get going. Scroder's coming up empty.
We're on our way, Howard, to the great outdoors.
Newton, you know what is out there in the great outdoors? Girls. Mmm, with brassieres and legs. You have a working knowledge of girls?
No, but I read about them.
Well, then, maybe I can furnish you with some schematic drawings.
All right.
Oh, wow. So he carries around, like, anatomical diagrams of girls. Yes. That's what that line means.
Right. So these guys are cooped up in the military base in their science lab. Seemingly since puberty. Like, they neither of them...
It seems like Steve Guttenberg has been down there for, like, 26 years.
Yeah. So that's it. Like, you get those characters. Ally Sheedy, we cut to her, and her home is swarmed with pets. Like, kittens are on her stovetop while she cooks. It's got to be days before she finds dead pets. She hears Number 5 outside, just wrecking her food truck. And they do a full, like, Ghostbusters Zool reveal. I think it might even be the music from Ghostbusters, where it's this really orchestral horror music.
It's a real similar musical cue. Yeah. I had the same thought.
And it's like this misty reveal of Number 5 with glowing red eyes, like, tearing apart her food truck. And she, in a moment, knows that the robot is actually a star alien who's picked her for first contact. Like, she's already honored at the opportunity to meet.
Made sense at first, because I was like, oh, okay. When I was watching this, my notes go from like, okay, that makes sense, because if you're in the 1980s, you don't really know what a robot is. Like, you probably know the word, but you haven't seen anything like humanoid or praying mantisoid like that. It could be mechanical, you don't know. But then they do a later reveal where she sees the plate that says he's from the robotics lab, and she's like, oh, you're one of those war robots I know everything about. Like, what the fuck are you? Your whole village is terrorized by robots all the time. And you're like, this one's an alien?
Yeah. She, like, doesn't know someone who hasn't worked at that fucking place. And she's like, wow, you're from the stars.
She also, like, really is shitty to him at that point, too. Like, she's like, oh, you're just one of those crappy robots. Like, she hasn't just spent the last 45 minutes with a miracle robot that has, like, a personality and is, like, learning shit.
We are getting ahead, though, because she does think it's an alien for a while. She invites it into her home. I guess, like, they do a whole bit where the robot can't understand her. They do this, like, who's on first bit a fucking lot in this movie, where she's, like, gesturing for the robot to come, and he just mimics her gesture rather than coming. And, like, fair enough.
Well, he comes eventually.
It is a robot.
Just to say.
Yeah, he does come all over the place. My note says that she brings it inside the house, and, like, not one of her 70 cats care. This is fucking ridiculous. This is 15 vacuum cleaners walking as a man. This would be their sworn enemy the second they saw it.
Because we've seen how they react to Roombas, right? And that's how he moves. So he's basically just a huge Roomba.
He's a huge Roomba. So much noise. She gives him her encyclopedias and he just burns through them like, as you might imagine. Very good practical effects. It looks great. But there's a lot of kittens on the bookshelf, so there's no way he finished all these without tearing some of those to pieces. So he can identify everything, but he identifies it by, like, smashing it. So he's like, apple, just fucking throws a bunch of apples. He's like, table, fuck your table, fuck your dishes.
Raccoon.
Then she turns on the TV. Raccoon. Rip it inside out. She turns on the TV, and now this is his life. Three Stooges commercials. Even in 1986, audiences knew exactly where this is going. It's like, oh, this is Robin Williams' worst bit. Go.
See, this is...
What a promise for the audience. Like, oh boy, the next hour and 20 minutes are going to be a treat.
Yeah, that Three Stooges thing is like right there. Any thinking, feeling, loyal human being would have bashed this thing's brains in with a bat. The second they saw it learning Three Stooges, because like
it's the worst thing to show a robot.
Yeah, you're just 100%. Teaching it martial arts, basically. Like you're all of a man's weaknesses.
Number 5, bash skull. Like it's just gonna kill people.
And expressly that there are no lasting consequences for exploiting those weaknesses. Like you have just created a murder robot immediately. If I could reboot Short Circuit, I would do that right there. It would be exactly the same up to this scene. And then as soon as he watched Three Stooges, it would just be upgrade from there on out. It would just be a bloodbath.
Just a slasher movie.
Yeah, no, if she didn't teach him about death with the cricket in like a scene in between that, he'd end up...
See, he doesn't know that yet. He doesn't know about death yet.
Yeah. He doesn't understand it yet.
He doesn't understand death.
He's in this house, literally surrounded on all sides by beautiful little kittens. And he thinks that if you crush something, you can just put it back together at this point.
Yeah. He read the encyclopedia. He read the fucking chapter on the Holocaust. He knows. This is like, they did this in Fifth Element.
He's a war robot.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
100%.
And he has a nuclear laser in her house.
He's got a laser.
You'd have to believe he'd have some concept of, like, destroying things.
We're 40 minutes into the movie. So The movie has like a momentum. Like,
that's too long to be in the movie.
On paper, I agree. But like when you're watching it, you're like, this feels about the right time for him to like learn what death is and for a single character in the movie to realize he's come alive. So he steals her. He steals Ally Sheedy's truck because he has now put together the logic that the war base is going to disassemble him. And since the grasshopper got disassembled and he's dead, then that will kill him. So he has to run for his life. He steals her truck. She jumps on the back of it. So they're still attached.
She does not want to live.
Yeah, she really does. He is smashing up everything she owns. Like, her life was already chaos, but he is... Agreed. And then he remembers death right before he drives her food truck off a cliff. And they do, like, their ninth Who's on First routine as the robot tries to explain to her that, yeah, I'm alive. I get what alive means, and that's what I am. I have a clip of Fisher Stevens again. I don't know why I put it here, but let's play it.
These guys have you gone, anyway?
Oh, you are a girl, right?
Yes, as far as I know.
I have seen some strange, bizarre drivers, but you will be awarded a cake.
Me? Talk to your robot. He did the driving.
Did you say the robot drove the truck?
Yeah, that's right, chum. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, Bulldike, you cannot hold your water with that story.
So he did say that.
Yep, I had that written down, too.
His malapropisms might have a slur in them. It's just like a warning at the start. He gets things wrong, and he might get them, like, really wrong.
Also, it's such a bold direction to take, like, we need the nerd that's not good with girls to take it so far that he literally doesn't know what a girl is. He has to say, you are girl, right?
You are girl.
Like, that's the fucking alien. Kill that one.
Yeah.
Use that bat.
Yeah, give that guy the Blade Runner test.
Was that butthead like a dog? I don't know why that popped into my head. That's one of my favorite Beavis and Butthead moments where Beavis identifies a dog and then Butthead says, you called a dude. I'm just like, what? Why the fuck did that get put on TV? Anyway, we're getting way off topic. The point is, this Balky Bartokomus monster is racist and intolerant in ways that are more than the ones baked into him.
It was a dazzling kaleidoscope of racism.
Yes. So, she's trying to explain to this fucking horrible racist and Steve Guttenberg that this robot's alive. And then the police academy guy shows up and he opens fire. Fisher Stevens is real handsy with Ally Sheedy while he's like trying to get her to cover. And when I say that, I mean, she comments on it in the middle of the gunfight. She's like, I know this is mostly, thank you for shoving me out of the way of the bullets, but like, I know this is mostly sexual assault. Played as a joke, of course.
You're getting away with something, pal.
Yeah. So they turn off Johnny Five. Problem solved. Both Steve Guttenberg and Fisher Stevens, they've mistaken this robot battle for a romantic date with Ally Sheedy, both of them. So they think they like got somewhere with this beautiful woman. My point is they've definitely fucked some of these robots. These guys are horny beyond.
I'm glad you said that. They have that mantra that they have where they said they won't get happy. They don't get sad. They just follow programming. Mm-hmm. And they say it in unison two or three times in the movie, which means it's a thing that they've had to repeat to each other a bunch of times, which means it's a thing that they have to keep reminding each other because they keep fucking the robots.
Yes. They keep having to deal with the ethics.
The robots don't love us. They don't love us. They're just following programming.
There's a real chance that people are, because we're silly, because we're all very silly here, there's a real chance people are thinking, like, we're finding something in the movie that is not there. And I expressly, in revisiting this movie, realized how deeply horny this is right from the jump. There's so much we've skipped over that's just, when he's first escaping the facility, Johnny Five checks out another one of the coffee robots' ass because, like, she's shaking her little power cord,
she's
and that's what he follows. And he goes and he knocks up and kind of feels up a gas pump, and like, it's horny straight throughout. Everybody in the movie is horny for Ally Sheedy, including the robot, including, I would argue, kind of the bad guy at times. Like, there's just a leer he gives her.
There's a shocking amount of Howard the Duck in this movie. I would not have expected it.
It's very Howard the Duck. But Howard the Duck was, that was the selling point. It was aware of it. Why is it horny? That would be my first feedback. If you gave me the script for notes, I'd be like, I really like the fantastical journey we're going on. One question, why is it so horny?
Right, just take all the horniness, put it in one guy, maybe.
A single post-it note on the front of the script, why is the robot horny?
You could just take robot out and put the blank. Why is blank so horny? That you, they'd be like, you have a good point. That describes every character in the movie. So, okay, so Johnny Five's like being carted away and he turns himself back on. He resolders himself. He grabs a replacement arm, hijacks the truck, ditches the transmitter, and then he turns up the radio and he's free. And I think this would be a really good time to just stop the movie and make it a TV pilot. Like, this is it's fantastic.
Yeah, his adventures, just traveling across, just fucking his way across America.
Absolutely.
Leaving cyborg children in the bellies of hitchhikers.
Oh, yeah. There's so many ladies across the country going to keep giving birth to RC cars. In this scene, I wanted to point out that when he's like grooving with the music and stuff, he's like driving all over. He's driving like Ben Gazzara in Roadhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's just like weaving just all over the road.
Weaving eye on the whole road. This is an amazing song. It's an Elda Barge song called Who's Johnny, which was not written for the movie. I don't know if it's about a girl pretending not to remember the singer who is named Johnny, or if she's fucking Elda Barge and pretending not to remember a second man she's fucking named Johnny. But it's definitely not about a combat robot. It's I don't know.
I think I read you said it wasn't written for the movie. I think maybe the movie was written for the song.
Yeah, no, that's the way it went.
Like, maybe the question being posed was, who's Johnny? And that, and somebody out there was like, I know.
The music video for that was just all short circuit footage and the judge just demanding to know who Johnny was. It's so incoherent. I read it. This was originally going to be Money for Nothing and they couldn't afford it. So they're like, we can get Elda Barge just went solo. I bet he'd sell us a fucking weird song about.
I'm trying to picture what this movie would have been if that song had been.
So wait, they didn't have that song and he just, I thought that's why he decided to name himself Johnny.
Which he doesn't do until the very end. I thought that happened earlier in the movie as a kid. I remember just thinking, of course that's Johnny Five. But that's a Short Circuit 2 thing.
Yeah, he's not Johnny Five until like the very, very last second. Fisher Stevens is back at the base. He says, maybe we have created another Frankfurter's monster. I'm not going to do the voice.
That's a good idea.
Switches. Yeah. Oh, it's my pleasure.
I don't know why I put that in my notes. I think this fucking minstrel character that's in this movie.
I think that one just really pissed me off. It's like, what the fuck?
They
don't have Frankenstein in fucking India?
He's a fucking roboticist and he doesn't know what a girl is?
Yeah, come on.
What? Anyway.
He has grafted a human vagina onto so many appliances.
He has fucked so many of these robots.
He knows exactly what Frankenstein is. Because it's how anyone would describe his love life.
He's only too familiar.
The news shows up at Ally Sheedy's house and the newscaster's also horny. They ask if the robot tried to molest her. And she says, quote, he's not that kind of robot. As if there are that type of robot.
She lives in Astoria. Live next to,
yeah, she lives in Astoria where Fisher Stevens is just unleashing fuckbots.
Just putting his libido into robot after robot and setting it loose on a poor fishing town without the resources to fight back or contact the outside world.
They're just constantly getting assaulted by robots. Her ex-boyfriend sees this on the news, and this was a very 80s villain thing to just see something and say, like, that means money to me. Yeah. So he sees her say, I didn't get molested by a robot. Yeah. And he's like, she knows where that fucking robot is. Like, they had a consensual love affair. Speaking of, that's coming up because number five bursts in on her while she's taking a bath. And I'm sure you guys have this quote in your notes. What he says to her?
Change
or
maybe color. Just
remember change color nice or software. Nice software.
Yeah. Mmm. There's a little mmm at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he openly ogles naked Ally Sheedy and then says she's got nice tits.
Yep. You have to remember that its core programming was done by Fisher Stevens and Steven Guttenberg.
Who it all makes sense. It checks out.
It all makes
currently
sense.
Making love to Gogurt. This
is a reconnaissance bot to go out into the world and tell him what a girl is.
Yeah.
It's supposed to report back.
Right. So now So now Allie and number five.
They just built a robot to find out about girls.
it's very weird science.
I'm gonna find out what you're up to.
I've got it. You know this contract, this military contract? What if we did like a backdoor lady robot? I don't know. I think it's a great plan.
So, I call it Fretbot 5000. And it's mission to panty raid.
Fucking $11 million panty raid robot.
You wouldn't have to change a fucking word of the script. You give it that title, it's no one questions it. Fretbot 5000.
Fretbot 5000, the panty raid, the $11 million panty raid robot.
Fretbot!
Same villain. You absolutely cast the bad guy from Police Academy for that movie. Okay, so Allie and number five, they're dancing along with Saturday Night Fever. This is the director's most famous movie.
Kind of.
He's
spinning around.
Yeah, kind of. He's just grabbing her and spinning her. And then he asks if he can like move into her home. And this is filmed and written like they're falling in love. I'm certain when I was 10 years old, I thought that's where they were going with it. And I looking back on it now, I agree with my 10-year-old self. You cut to the next morning, like you do in an 80s sex scene. And number five is making her breakfast. I mean, he's trashing her kitchen. The very last untrashed corner of her life. But like, this is how you would film a love scene.
That's 80s shorthand. If you cut from like a slow dance where he dips her and she looks deeply into his eyes and then we smash cut to him cooking breakfast while she comes out in a robe.
Yeah.
That's they fucked last night. You could not be more clear.
Sex.
That's 1986 where they fucked.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, I couldn't get over him just splashing his robot claws around in the food. It's
yeah.
So that metal it's and oil good. And stuff in there. Here's your pancakes.
It's just, you already pictured it, even if you haven't seen the movie. He's got an open bowl. He's just fucking whisking pancake mix into the walls.
The pancakes taste like the street.
I think it's the French who say that a man cooks like he makes love. I think that's true for robots.
And violent. Yeah, violent.
Yeah, yeah just like
maladroit and violent.
Fluids everywhere.
Fluids.
Spinning.
360 degrees of fluid.
Smashing, burning.
So her ex shows up with a fucking rifle. He's there for the $25,000 robot reward. He knows where she keeps her key, so he just breaks right in. This part of the movie's insane. Okay, the robot leaves as soon as he figures out what's going on. They have like a hostage situation going for a little while, and the robot kind of gets like, "Oh, you're going to kill me," so he leaves. The robot's not a hero. It leaves her to die. Then the ex-boyfriend calls her a bitch, goes running outside and slips. Just completely hits shit on the porch. The actor, not the character. So Ali Sheedy is delivering her lines while she's cracking up at this obvious flubbed take.
He does eat shit.
I don't know why they kept it. Like, what part of this shot of a man leaving a house was so expensive they couldn't do a second take? But it's in this classic movie. This guy totally slips and falls and Ali Sheedy laughs at him. Anyway, I love it. But number five hasn't completely fled. He actually disassembled the guy's car, which from the script in the text, we know that he thinks is murder. He thinks he has completely eviscerated and tortured to death this car.
He murdered that guy's Camaro.
Yes. He blocks a bunch of bullets with a little wheel. So we've now demonstrated like this robot is extremely deadly until the guy picks up a pipe and knocks him over.
Knocks him over, yeah. $11 million war bot supposed to march a nuke down Main Street Moscow. He knocks it over with pipe.
They never taught it to defend against sticks.
He's doing a lot of like movie lines and stuff. It's really annoying. He does like Bruce Lee sounds while he's shooting lasers. He shoots the bad guy's pants off. Ali Sheedy laughs at his sexual humiliation.
How often were we doing this in the 80s? Like, this is like an E.T., like Howard the Duck type thing, right? We're all still chasing E.T. with this, like a wacky alien or some sort of monster creature that speaks in pop culture references. There's a lot of these around this time.
Yeah, I feel like it's hard to get away from. Like, you're thinking, like, what a funny misunderstanding it would be to come from the stars and think we all talk like a Dr. Pepper commercial. But
also, Dr. Pepper. Let's get that money.
That's true. I'm sure they appreciated that. I just found that, like, while this guy's being sexually humiliated by a combat robot who's just, like, learning how to behave like a toddler, Ali Sheedy has no concept of the danger she's in. She is just having a fun time. And that's, I guess, kind of the vibe of the entire decade, which I sort of miss. I have another Fisher Stevens.
Oh, goddammit.
Did I clip this here?
You know, I know why number 5 took a liking to her. If it did have that capability, which it doesn't, but if it did. I mean, I think she's kind of pretty, don't you think?
I am thinking she is a virgin. Or at least she used to be.
Hello, Crosby.
Dude, it's Howard.
I know you're listening, so pick up the mic.
This is Crosby. How's your back, Howard?
Oh, just hunky-dory, thanks. I just swore out some warrants for your arrest.
Oh, good golly.
But because I'm a nice guy, I'm going to give you one last chance. I got a phone call from that loony in the lunch wagon. She wants to see you. Only you.
She does?
Oh, her pants are blazing for you, Newton Crosby.
So, generally not a good sign for the survival of the woman if the guy, the first time he sees her, says, I am thinking she's a virgin, or at least she used to be. Like, that's how I would shorthand, this man is going to eat you.
But it also demonstrates that he's, like, in the wrong movie. He thinks he's doing, like, a Leslie Nielsen movie. So a lot of his lines are, like, he's, like, talking all wrong with a heavy accent. And they're like, oh, where are you from? And he's like, oh, from Bakersfield. And he's like, oh, no, your ancestors, dickhead. He's like, oh, Pittsburgh. And you're like, okay, this is too silly. Like, you're from the wrong universe if that's your bit.
Right. He's, like, weirdly, broadly comedic.
Yeah, he doesn't vibe with the rest of the movie, which is crazy on its own merits, but he should not be here. Like, if you took his role completely out of this movie, it would be no different, aside from that it wouldn't be as bad.
Right. Like, he's just here to ruin the movie.
He has no impact on, like, the relationships, the plot. Like, I would say 80% of the time when he says his little joke, Steve Guttenberg doesn't even have a reaction. Like, not even a reaction shot. He just cold walks away from him.
Right. He might not even exist. Like,
I don't think within the fiction of this movie.
Shit, Shyamalan!
I don't think within the fiction of this movie. I think he's not indie. I think he's doing an impression, and Steve Guttenberg is fucking sick of it.
Yeah, he's like, this is too long a bit.
He's been doing this for the last 6 years we've been working together. I've never laughed once.
I just like that Ellie is trying to set up like a private robot negotiation with Steve Guttenberg, and he thinks it's a date, and Fisher Stevens thinks it's a date. Like, they know so little about women that, like, they think that this is a Porky's movie when they're trying to navigate, like, this
right.
this delicate like robot transfer.
He literally says, let's go pick up some chicks while they're supposed to be going to find the runaway nuke bot.
Right.
That's a chick. That's a chick to him.
Look, meanwhile, the military has sent the other robots to capture number 5, and he's battling them, but he's silly in an 80s comedy, so he's invincible. And the villain should know this. Steve Guttenberg taught it to him specifically in Police Academy 1, 2, and 4. Like, this guy's a fucking idiot to go in against a silly robot. And so, of course, the robot is like, oh, right. It's so...
If anyone should understand the formidability of wackiness, yeah.
Yeah, he lures one into, like, a snare trap and then turns him off. He matadors another one into an outhouse. So you get the vibe. But now, instead of just turning them off and defeating them, he instead of giving his brother's life, I guess, is something that maybe he should have considered. Like, I want all the other robots like me to come to life. He rips them open and turns them into Three Stooges slaves, which feels like a fate worse than death in a lot of ways. He barges into the bar to save Ally Sheedy in this negotiation. And there's a moment I love in this scene because the bartender sees a robot rampage into her bar and all the local military guys open fire on it. She sees this and decides she's on the robot side, and she bashes a pitcher over a soldier's head for nothing. It does nothing to change the sway of battle.
Again, it implies such like a deep relationship between this town and this fucking rogue war lab that is constantly just unleashing their robots to terrorize them. Like, they understand it's not the robot's fault, it's the people's fault. And even if you're not on side robot, you are on side kill the people that unleashed the robot.
You can't run into a military operation and just bash a soldier over the head with a pitcher of beer. This woman was probably shot dead.
Unless your life is meaningless, unless you've been terrorized by warbots for so long that you don't even react when one explodes into your bar, unless you just don't even care anymore. Like, these people have been pushed too far, to the point of revolution.
It's her bar. The robot ran through the wall of her bar, and she's like, fuck yeah, robot.
Let's burn it down. I got nothing.
I guess the robots come down off the mountain every so often to claim the firstborn, and then they...
Prima Nocta. Robot Nocta. We'll get there. Jamie, cut that. No, refine it.
No.
I wanted to hit that when he like easily dispatches the other robots with like rudimentary traps, like that's like, if anything, that's like a poor showing for the robots, right? Like that's like just demonstrating right. that you guys spent way too much money on these robots.
When one man who understands the Three Stooges could have just taken you all apart.
Really yep. destroyed it with Bugs Bunny wackiness. Like that's... Mm.
God, we better hope the Russians never get Bugs Bunny.
Allie and number five get away, and she tries to teach him how to kill. Like, she's, like, filled with rage. Those fucking assholes. You should. Next guy you see, shoot him with a laser. And he's like, no, I must never kill. And then he does a John Wayne impression, man famous for playing characters who never kill. They meet up with Steven Guttenberg and explain the whole thing for the goddamn 10th time.
John Wayne would have killed the robot for refusing to kill.
Absolutely. Like... Absolutely.
Sorry.
He would have called it a Fisher Stevens slur. Steve Guttenberg's like, it's just a malfunction. And then we learn the theme of the film, life, not malfunction. Guttenberg, he gives him a tomato soup Rorschach test. It's just like, okay, all smug about it. Like, you fucking idiot, you can't pass this. He's like, looks like butterfly, bird, maple leaf. And then Steve Guttenberg goes, holy shit. And then we see he's a robot. He goes, no shit, where's he shit? Which, I mean, he waffles back and forth between I'm a living, thinking, learning, being, and I'm a fucking idiot robot. And then Steve finally realizes he can prove the robot isn't alive with a Jewish joke. And I'm not kidding. He tells a Jewish joke. The robot laughs. He taught the robot anti-Semitism, thus proving its life. It's the same way Elon Musk sold users on Grok.
It's the final and ultimate test of sentience is laughing at a Jewish joke that he doesn't deliver correctly.
Right.
Dang memes!
The army finds him again, and it's pretty serious. This robot has a deadly laser. It's done about $200 million worth of damage to this town.
It has a fucking laser cannon on its shoulder, like the Predator, and it's just running around out there.
Yeah, it's really rampaging by any standards.
This has gone on might for be carrying far too long.
A nuclear bomb. And these two civilians and obvious maniacs, they're teaching it how to fuck and hate the Jews. So maybe something should be done. The robot makes a run for it, and they blow it up with a helicopter. The end. Our fucking hero is dead. Allie and Steve Guttenberg, they just get in a truck and leave. Like maniacs wanted in connection to dozens of federal crimes do in a situation like this. You probably know this. It's a fake out.
Yeah. Before they leave, or maybe as they're leaving... the big boss of the Warbot company, Howard, fires the evil military guy, Schroeder, which is such a crazy decision to flip that late in the movie, because if firing him was an option, like, they make it seem like this Howard guy is totally helpless against the rampage of Schroeder, the military thing. Like, yeah. He's the military attaché.
His influence over him, like, goes back and forth depending on the scene, yeah.
But then he can just casually fire him means, like, you were letting this guy try to, and I want to reiterate, destroy $11 million. He was just going to blow up. He wanted nothing more. And every turn, everybody else wanted to rescue the robot, to reprogram the robot. Only Schroeder wanted to blow it up, and he was very clear about that. And every time he looked his boss straight in the face and was like, I want to light $11 million on fire. And his boss was like, I'm helpless against this. Yeah, only when he lit $11 million on fire did his boss go, well, I guess you're fired. Why was that?
He had like kill all robots on as a face tattoo. And anyway, he just hates
why were
robots.
You helpless against him the whole movie? It's such an insane flip at the end. At means nothing.
I agree completely. I had that in my notes with next to the words, should we even talk about this? It's so confusing. Because it really is like, where did this come from?
Right. I feel like they wanted to do a bit, or they realized at the last minute, like, we didn't give the bad guy any consequences. Like, so he has to lose his job. But if this was just a job and that was his boss the whole time, this whole movie is fucking crazy.
I saw a really funny comment, like, while I was on IMDb looking for all that fascinating movie trivia I gave us earlier. One of the comments was like, this movie does not have a villain. But, like, it has the bad guy from Police Academy who wants to kill the main character.
He just hates also, robots with all of his soul.
And an ex-boyfriend who showed up at her house to steal her dog for medical research and then came back with a rifle.
And a racist who has diagrams on him at all times for how to disassemble a woman. Like, I think it's all villains.
It's all villain.
Wall-to-wall
from top
villains.
To bottom.
Yeah.
It's a fake out. Just in case you haven't seen Short Circuit, I want to like wrap things up for you. Number five took a bunch of parts and made a whole new robot out of it, thus becoming God, I guess, and breathing life into this thing only to watch it get exploded for its own selfish purposes. So
another $11 million.
Yeah, he learned the futility and aimlessness of creation.
Right.
As did we all.
That's the theme.
Oh, life is pointless.
Drives the fucking van off a cliff.
Actually, fuck it. Why not disassemble?
So Steve Guttenberg, maybe I missed this earlier. He has like a ranch in Montana. Maybe they gave a line to it that he was going to retire to a ranch in Montana. Anyway, he has a ranch in Montana. He's going to go move there with all of Ali Sheedy's animals and number five. Except now he's like, my name is Johnny Five. And just a beautiful theme song kicks in. I just recorded the whole thing. I love it so much. We're ending the show on this, by the way. So if you have anything left to say, say it to the haunting love theme.
I want to say that truck they take off in had enough parts for Johnny to build a whole other robot, another $11 million robot, and plenty more.
A lot of reasons not to let him drive away.
That truck is worth $200 million that they just drove away with. Money means nothing in this movie.
He did like a little prestige in the van. He cloned himself and then...
This is the GDP of, like, an entire country that they're just letting drive away, that they've exploded several times. I guarantee you $1 million would have changed that story in the 80s.
There's Give enough the firepower here to kill the Oregon National Guard. Come and follow me, and you're gonna be dancing too.
It's Supreme Day here on Hot Dog Prime, the day where all hot dog denizens stand tall and proudly salute the heroes who made the ultimate sacrifice in our never-ending meat war against the vile burger race. Aaron Croston, Adrian H., Aiden Muat, Alex Nolenberg, who held on to a grenade too long. That's a lesson for you new recruits. If you love something, like a hand grenade, gotta let it go. Alpha Scientist Javo, Unandy, Armando Nava, Benjamin Cyronin died from flamethrower wounds received at the platoon barbecue, but let the record show his hot dogs were cooked to perfection and in record time. Bim Telzer, Brandon Garlock, Brian Saylor, Burrito, Cyril, Chase, Clementine Danger never opened his parachute. Is convinced you don't take fall damage if you land on the enemy. We applaud the sentiment, even as we mourn the result. Greg LeMoyne, Cuevas, Dan B, Daniel Slope, D. Devin, the Rogue Supreme, David Shulm, Dean Costello, Delta Foxtrot found out his own wife was a burger and turned her in without a second thought. Some say he died when the SWAT dogs raided his house. We know it was really a broken heart. Drayson, Dusty's rad title, Eric Ria, Every Zig, Fancy Shark, Gareth tried teen wolfing a burger tank. Tried. I do dishonor to the man. He teen wolfed that burger tank. It still counts if you crash it into a lake. Jell-O-Ho. Good Satan and his hot witches. Greg Cunningham. Hambone. Haraka died from potato poisoning. Just regular old potato poisoning. Wash those potatoes. No job too small. Harvey Benguini. Honk. Jaber Al Aiden. James Board. Jared Mountain Mad. Jeff Araski fatally crashed the Dodge Hyper Challenger he bought with his signing bonus. How many good soldiers will we lose to the Dodge Hyper Challenger? Jim Salter. John Dean. John McCammon. John Minkoff. Joseph Searles. Josh S. Joshua Graves. Justin B. Kate M. Kumutsas was hollowed out and had his animated corpse used as a honeypot trapped by the burgers. Remember to wrap those wieners, hot dogs. Kyle Campbell. Lisa. M. Jahi Chappelle. Mark Mahoney. Matt Riley butt-dialed an airstrike on himself at a gender reveal party. It's a girl, and she's already enlisted to avenge her daddy. Max Baroy. Michael Dillon. Michael Lair. Mickey Lohman. Mike Stiles. Moju. Mort is actually a burger who saw the freedoms and benefit packages we offer and was won over. Don't shoot the skinny burger in the long bun. He's on our side. Mr. Bob Gray. ND. Neil Bailey. Neil Schaefer. Neku-104 held a machine gun nest against a 4,000-strong burger horde, only to die of diabetes at this very award ceremony. Proper nutrition, it isn't just a good idea. It's your duty. Ozzy Olin. Patrick Herbst. Rachel. Rhiannon. Sarkovsky hollowed out a sexy burger and climbed inside to use it as a honeypot trap. It worked a little too well, but good initiative, soldier. Sean Chase. Spotty Reception. Super Non. Ted H. Thomas Cavazos. Timmy Leahy knows if you see two buns, you start shooting. It's a tragedy what happened at that hunk convention, but vigilance is always market price. Tommy G. Velo. Booster. Waylon Russell. Zach and Ava both simultaneously choked to death on footlongs, but that was one hell of a USO show, wasn't it, dogs? And finally, Hot Dog Prime hereby posthumously bestows the Medal of Misguided Valor on Sergeant Ken Paisley, who died in a kamikaze run on a burger nest. It turned out it was just an old Pizza Hut. They're shaped a lot alike. Remember, cadets, if it's flat and cheesy, say pizza pleasey. If it's beefy and round, you bomb it to the ground!